If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks, for closet Christ. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with Destiny.
Greetings in the love of the Supreme Creator. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command, Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christs. This evening, our seminar topic is True Seeing is Revelatory. So, if you're ready, let's take a deep breath together. And allow that divine seer, that is the only one that looks through your eyes, to look through your eyes. And in the looking through your eyes, fill your whole body with light, that you may see in the light, through the light, which is the light of the One Supreme. It of itself. And quietly center yourself in the center of your head, back behind your brow, in the seat of the soul, the seer with a capital S. Don't force, place, notice, gently. That's it. And now we breathe in God. And we breathe out love. We breathe in God. We breathe out love. We breathe in God. We breathe out love. And again, just gently pay attention to the focus in the center of your head. And allow your vision very gently to open. If you have your eyes closed, you may see an opening like the lens of a camera. You may see what appears to be an eye or a circle of light. Perhaps a blue dot or purple. Or it may look like the sun. Or you may see nothing at all but blackness, or perhaps a dim light. Or you may see flashes of concentric circles. These are all part of learning how to see from the seer with a capital S, rather than through the thinker. Just notice the very subtle difference. Some of you are finding your body beginning to rock. And that's when you are connecting to what we call the living word, which is the sound current. Divine Spirit speaks through light and sound, the living word and the living light. the living word, creates. The living light illumines. And together they manifest through us as living love. Unconditional divine love. Which is, oddly enough, supremely impersonal and independent. It walks in the light of true being without need of any outer support. You walk in your own Godhood realized. In this true state of your true identity as the divine Atman, the Atmic Self, the I Am that I Am, is gradually revealed by what you see. So let's clear any dissonance from our mind right now by chanting Hu 3 times. This is an ancient name for the all that is that we call God, divine source, creator, that at one time was conveyed only in initiations. It's a very familiar name to the tribes in Africa, and again, only conveyed at the highest initiations. But it is part of a mantra in almost every world religion. And I like to share it because it is not conditioned by a particular religious belief or doctrine. And I like to call it the heavenly, universal reverberation of that which is nameless and formless, but which we can attune to as we chant the Hu. Deep breath. Hu. And notice how that immediately puts you in the center of your head. Immediately connects you to the divine and lifts the mind beyond the thinking into awareness. So it's all in the way we look at things. Truly speaking, when you look at anything, it affects that thing that you're looking at. In other words, it goes from random atoms moving about to beginning to take a form. It takes on form as you look at it. This is something they've noticed now in quantum physics. It's scientifically been demonstrated time and time again that whoever's looking through that microscope affects whatever is being observed. So it's important to understand that your seeing is creating. Your seeing is formative. But I'd like to look at it in a little different way tonight, including that, but also the fact that whatever we see is what we are. For example, do you realize that you cannot see your eyes? Without a mirror, without a reflection, a reflective something, you can't see your eyes. You can't see your face. You can't see your neck. You can't see the back of your head. You can't see your back at all. I mean, just think of that. Isn't that the oddest thing? You cannot see your own eyes. So primitive man must have had the first glimpse of themselves looking into a pond or a lake. That means that in these lower psychic and material worlds of conditioned consciousness, we can only see by reflection. That's why what we see in another mirrors what we have within ourselves. Every single person is a mirror. And as you see in them, you are actually revealing to yourself the content of your own being. And that pertains to what we see and we call the, quote, outer world. There is no outer world. There are simply ideas within our mind, interpretations, assumptions, ideas and ideals that we have in our mind that are reflected as the world. Isn't that interesting? The geometric, sacred geometric configuration for the eye is identical with the configuration of sacred geometry that indicates light. And that light is signified the same in all eyes, whether it's an animal, a fish, a bird, a human being, an extraterrestrial, a deva, an angel, whatever the life form, the eye is the light. And when the ego is looking through the filter of the mind, which is a separate point of identification, what you see is a lie. The ego cannot see, has no vision. Excuse me. In the Course in Miracles, there's a lesson. God is the light by which I see, and vision is his gift. So to have vision doesn't mean to see out of the body's eyes. To have vision means to see the revelation that occurs when you're looking through the higher awareness of soul. There's a revelatory, you're being shown something that goes beyond the obvious form and the conditioning of the mind. So it's interesting, true vision, according to the Course in Miracles, begins with a series of experiences of alteration in vision. For example, most of us have many, many pairs of glasses around the house, because we've noticed that our vision changes with the day. Some days you can see better than other days, and some days everything is very, very blurred. Other days you can see more clearly. I notice when I'm in a very, very altered state, everything turns into light, and I look through things as if they were transparent. Sometimes I can't actually see the form of a person. I see the light presenting as that person. Sometimes I can see through that form. And other times there's just so much light, I'll sit in a dark room and I don't realize the lights are off because there's so much light in the mind, in the head, that I don't actually realize it's dark. I can see in the dark pretty well. So pay attention, because this is all part of the illumining of the mind, as more and more of the soul can see through the levels of the mind. As the mind begins to be purified of the lower egoic tendencies, you begin to see more and more clearly. And when you really see, everything dissolves into light. And you are the light. And the light is all that is. And the song of God, which lifts you beyond all illusions and all sense of separation into the unification of the one divine love. So true vision starts with our beginning to see beyond the actual physical form. You'll start to see light, kind of like a golden outline was my experience, like a golden outline that outlines, you know, things that you, well, for example, what happened to me when I was first opening my vision was that I'd get up at night to use the restroom, and I noticed a golden light around my bathroom mat. So pay attention when you see alterations in how you're looking and how you're seeing. And a good time to catch it is when you're not quite awake. You're kind of half asleep. You're half in one world and half in the other. Notice those in-between points in your life. And notice your vision. For example, twilight, dawn, in-between breaths, in-between waking and sleep, when you're just dozing off, when you're just coming awake. Pay particular attention, because you're not fully in this dimension. And you can carry through glimpses at that time and visions more clearly than in any other time. So we begin to live a life that is not fully here and not fully there, and yet we're entirely here and now, if that makes sense. We are learning to become those who walk awake in a world, but we see things through the vision of the higher awareness. We train the mind to interpret things that line up with the Word of God, with the will of God, with the truth of God. And again, truth is absolute. It is not relative. It is absolute. It's either totally eternal, imperishable, and unchanging, which would be divine, or it's passing and perishable and limited to a particular something in time and space. And that is not truth. That would be the apparent, the obvious, the outer, but the passing show, basically. So begin to notice what you're noticing. Notice what you're seeing. Notice the state in between states of consciousness. Every in-between is a portal to beyond. So notice when the mind is not fully operating. But you, as soul awareness, are. The soul never sleeps. Only the mind goes into what we call the three qualities of nature. The balanced, the active, and the passive. Passive. Notice when you shift from beta, that's the busy everyday chit-chat mind, to alpha, which is a light meditative state. notice when the brain waves shift from active mundane mind to quiescent mind. Notice how different things appear to you when you're in a good mood, when you're rested, nourished, feel good about yourself. Notice when you're worried, anxious, paranoid, defensive. Notice how things look to you then. Notice when you feel confident and safe and walk in faith, how things appear to you. Notice how things appear when you're in negative moods, angry, upset. Notice how you can't see clearly at those times. It's absolutely impossible to focus your mind when you're worried. I mean, pay attention. When you're angry, it's like your whole vision darkens. You can't see at all. You can't think. Pay attention. Now, it's interesting because our mind takes on the color of our mood, our attitude, of how we're looking at things. But bear in mind that our mind, our mindset, is really only our interpretation, our opinion, our biases, our conditioning revealing itself. Our mindset can be changed. In fact, our mindset changes regularly. And hopefully, it changes often and is very resilient. We don't want a set, closed mind. We don't want a mind that's made up. That's a closed mind. And I don't believe anyone that likes our radio shows is probably of that mindset. But you can never tell. This goes out to people all over the world. But you take on, the mind takes on the color of your mental mood, I guess we could call it, your mindset. For example, when you're angry, hostile, lustful, avaricious and aggressive in trying to get what you want, the mind is red. When you're prideful and arrogant and boasting and egocentric, the mind is kind of a brownish orange. None of these colors are beautiful, by the way. They're always mottled, dark. They're not clear. So when we say red, it's not a beautiful crimson. It's a muddied red. It's a muddied orange. If the mind is very selfish, you actually look like you're in a prison. They're like bars that are brownish and sort of a mustardy, browny color. That's when you're greedy, there's like little red, graspy things that curl out from that brownish mind color. Little grabby, hook-like energies that come in the mind. A hateful mind is black with red flashes. An irritated mind is speckled with red dots like measles. A depressed mind is gray, sometimes with a little bluish tint. A rigid, closed, dogmatic mind is navy blue. A suicidal mind is black. A loving mind is rose pink. A tender, kind mind is a very light, gentle pink. A brilliant intellectual mind is yellow. Sometimes you will see gold or bright yellow around a teacher who's teaching, and that could be some of the soul coming in, which would be more of a golden light that surrounds people. The spiritual mind is a beautiful, clear blue, often tinged with lilac. The healing mind is green, often aquamarine, looks like beautiful, clear Bermuda waters. The transcendent, transforming mind is violet or purple. The pure, spiritualized mind is sparkling white. And when you have a connection with the spiritual brotherhood of masters, you will see rainbows appear in the aura. I remember my beautiful husband, when they did an aura photograph of him, his aura was pure white and filled with rainbows. He was such a great, great soul. So how you view the world and others and yourself indicates the color of the lens you are looking through. The way to self-realization is to study yourself like a scientist with as much diligence and self-inquiry as a scientist trying to find a cure for one of our dreaded diseases. You notice everything, and we're infected with the dreadful disease of againstness and hostility, and antagonistic feelings towards the world, towards ourselves, towards people. And we're only fighting the phantoms of our own mind. There is nothing outside of us whatsoever. Nothing is outside of us. Nothing. And since ideas do not leave their source, we are stuck with our thoughts, our assumptions, our prejudices, our bias, our grievances, which hide the light of the world that we are. It's impossible to realize God if you hold a judgment against anyone or anything. That becomes the barrier to your own self-emancipation, your own spiritual liberation. So these are very serious things. If you're very serious about full awakening and ending the cycle of constant karma and reincarnation, you held accountable for every thought, word, and deed. So you have to embrace yourself and everything to your heart as your own child of consciousness that you have given birth to. And while I'm at it, there are no outer dark forces trying to attack you. Again, everything is your own consciousness. Something you have placed in your own personal universe. We all live in our own separate universe until we break through that shell of separative identity and awaken in the all that is as the all that is. But meanwhile, we're in this little bubble world that looks like it's separate, and it is, because you have seen it that way, and it is as you would have it be for as long as you would have it be. But everything is within your own, let's say, your own little eggshell universe. That means that you have had experiences in all of the worlds, universes, galaxies, planetary systems, all the dimensional levels beneath the soul realm, that we call the psychic and material realms of duality and polarized points of view, enactments. And so everything that you experience, whether it's a dream, well, everything's a dream, waking and sleeping, but in a dream, where you're actually asleep and experiencing something that you later call a dream, you are operating within your own conditioned field, your own private, personal universe that contains everything you've ever said, thought, done, imagined, postulated, put forth, energized throughout all of your existences, all of your millions and billions and gazillions of incarnations. Because soul, in coming down into these realms of evolution as a unit of consciousness, becomes awake in the mineral kingdom, the plant kingdom, the animal kingdom, the fish and bird kingdoms, finally makes it into the human kingdom. And then in the human kingdom begins to move beyond the human into the soul realms, and from the soul realms into the God realms. So in our passage through the dream field that we call our conditioned arena, our personal universe, we've been everywhere and done it all. And so we live in this creative arena, which is our own personal private field of dreams, and everybody has one. Everyone lives in it. And the only way you can tell what's in there is what shows up. What do you dream about? What do you notice? What do you pay attention to? That's showing you, revealing to you the contents of your own private universe. Now, when you can see it from the position of the soul, which would be the objective observer, just neutral, just watching the parade, and you don't latch into, react to, and get sucked into that, the seeing from that objective observer begins to dissolve the karmic field of that. Why? Because the true seer, with a capital S, is seeing through the eyes, the inner vision. It is seeing the truth, the absolute, immortal truth of God, is that you are indistinguishable from God. There is nothing in you but God. There is nothing in you but purity, holiness, divinity. You're birthless, you're deathless. Nothing in the passage through the dream field of time, space, becoming, evolution, none of that sticks on you. Unless you identify yourself with it and get sucked into it. The way out is to see truly. Seeing truly is when God, the higher self, the divine consciousness, the Buddha, looks through your eyes and illusion just vanishes. It's like turning on the light in a dark room. That's all you do. You turn on the light in a darkened mind, and all of the boogeymen disappear. All the evildoers disappear. But why hate the evildoers? Do you realize we came as a stream of consciousness from the unified field of absolute oneness and divine perfection down into these realms of consciousness to see what was there? To begin to understand and play in the field of duality. We wanted this. We asked for this. This is part of soul's absolute curiosity to explore and know itself in the personal, in the ego sense, in the divine sense, in every level and permutation of consciousness. The soul wishes to explore. There is nothing good or evil. Everything simply is. And it is how we look at it that it becomes and interacts with us then, be it adversarial or divinely. And both are instructive. We need to learn to live without judging anything but accepting everything as it is and appreciating it as it is. It's hard to do, I know. How can you appreciate pain and suffering and disease and all of that? On the other hand, how would you appreciate health and well-being and joy and feeling fantastic if you didn't have that polarized experience? How could we experience and express our full godhood if we didn't have the contrast of what it's like to be locked into the density of conditioned thought forms that then we project outside of ourselves and feel like we're being victimized by them? So, okay, well, what about the galactic battles? We have all participated in a warring universe under the laws of polarity and duality. They're part of, let's say, the ego's version of things, which is adversarial and separative. We've been in the ego's field of dreams. But who or what is the ego? A point of view, an interpretation of being abandoned, cast out, judged, separated from the love of God. That's all it is, a little silly thought form that we forgot to laugh at and shrug off. But as we spoke of last week, with the ego mind arose the perception of linear time and separation and distance. In other words, time, space, form, the mind, all arose at the same instant. Because your creation, because you are God and a creator God, even your thought, what is it going to be like to be separate, was honored with a whole separate worldview, a whole separate series of multiple worlds, planets, universes, suns, moons, asteroids, everything that is outpicturing separation. So that we then became many, or pretended like we became many, and entered the holodeck of the manyness and the differences and the plays of opposites. And we forgot to laugh. We forgot it was simply a field trip, an exploratory field trip. And so we embodied again and again and again in these warring worlds and warring universes. But they're all within what we would call our individualized, personified universe. Now, this is where the value of the path of the living word becomes very helpful. You can use the living light to navigate in the psychic and material realms, but to exit them entirely, you have to go by the way of the sound current. The sound current alone is transcendental to the psychic and material fields that we call the world, when we tune on TV, when we open our eyes in the morning, when we look in the mirror, all those things that we see reflected out here in this world of reflection. All of it simply dissolves back into the love that alone is all that is. And when you see through the eyes of true vision, of true, when God looks through your eyes, God only sees God. That's how you can tell if a person is God-realized. Now, many of you listening to these seminars are awakening and becoming self-realized, or you're already self-realized. What is self-realization? It's to realize that you are not the body, not the mind, not the feelings and emotions, that you are soul, that you are an individualized unit of the Supreme Consciousness. That point of view is a collective. It's where you begin to feel a common kinship with all life and all people. And many of us are moving and living from that state pretty much all the time now. Very few of us are running active hatred. Very few of us indulge a bad mood longer than maybe a few hours at most. Most of us are pretty savvy at clearing ourselves and getting centered again when we lose it. And some of us are walking in what we call a state of living freedom, or a jivan mukta. We're an individual that's liberated from personal selfhood. We live a more expanded life, where we're more interested in contributing and serving than we are focusing on our own self, you know, in a separative sense. So what we're doing is looking at this from a very high level, because there are many, many, many teachings and things out there that will teach you how to move the furniture around in your emotional house. That'll move your thought forms around in your mental house. That'll move things around in the physical body house. But practically no one is telling you how to exit all of those houses for good. And it's because they don't know. They have not been initiated into the way that takes them beyond the light, into the living word of the sound current of God. And that is something that you attune to, that's already within you, but you usually don't identify it until it is physically initiated by a living master in a physical body. And sometimes it happens just in association with such a person without any outer formal. For example, Jesus could initiate with a glance. He had many initiates. He was one of the greatest, is one of the greatest of the spiritual travelers. A spiritual traveler has the keys and the ability, physically and spiritually, to take the consciousness of the soul up through the dimensional levels of illusion and entrapment, all the way up into the soul realm and establish it there. Once the soul has recognized its home, it doesn't leave there. The consciousness may still be in a physical body working in the human levels, so-called, but there is a part that never loses track of itself as soul. Maybe a little sleepy, fall asleep, lose awareness, but that sound current, once it is activated and quickened in your awareness, will draw you inexorably home. One of the analogies that I like so much, if any of you have gone to Disneyland or a similar theme park where they have those boats that give you a jungle ride tour or some other tour, the boat itself has a big cable under the water that's drawing it along a predestined route. And up at the helm, there's this person that's acting as a captain, that's making all of these movements and acting like they're steering the ship. But all the while, the ship is being drawn along this cable, along a predestined path. We could use the person up there at the helm turning the wheel and pretending like he or she is navigating the ship. We could call that person the human being that's identified with their personality and their doership, thinking that they're in charge there. And the ship is a metaphor for your life. Underneath, there's that cable drawing you inexorably to union with your true self as God. And that's good to remember, because when you are connected, and many of us were connected by one of the ancient travelers, many of us listening, we're initiates of the Master, the spiritual traveler, Jesus, or Yeshua. And some of us were with other travelers in even more ancient times, more ancient civilizations, and planetary systems, like Venus, for example, where the sound current path, the path of the divine light and sound, is our only path. It's our only science. It's our only spiritual way of seeing, being, and living. And so it's very important to be connected to the sound current. If you are an initiate of the sound current, you know what I'm talking about, because you experience that inexorable pull of your innermost being to the divine. It's the topic of every mystic. I call a person a mystic who's had this experience, who has been touched, married, if you will, with the beloved to such an extent that everything else doesn't attract their attention. I mean, they move through life, but it's like when you've had a really delicious meal and you're full. You know, people can offer you all sorts of delicacies and there's no attraction, there's no interest. You're full. A mystic is full up of the beloved, and nothing else whets the appetite but the presence divine. So that would let you know that you've been initiated into the living word. Because you can turn from the light, but once you have been touched by the living word of God, Bhagavad Gita, the song of God, the celestial harmony, the call of the beloved, the neigh, the flute, the reed of the beloved, that sound, it will haunt you and draw you and lead you and dissolve you in the beloved. So, look for the light, listen for the sound. You will hear the sound echoed in every sound, and you will hear it in specific sounds that identify for you where you are traveling in your inner consciousness, because each realm has a sound. Each realm has a color. each chakra opens you into a world within the psychic and material dream universes. Only the brow chakra and the crown chakra and the chakras out of the body and in the higher dimensions lead you beyond this world. And to have access to them, you have to transcend the mundane mind, the mundane mindset, and all of the lower self dynamics and dramatics and drama and all that stuff that the false self uses as a delaying, distracting tactic. Because the last thing the false self, the egoic self, wants is for you to wake up. Because then it feels like it will be destroyed. But the ego is nothing but a thought form. And like all thought forms, it will become dissolved in the love of God. And that energy, which can never be destroyed, simply enhances and builds in greater light. So every experience that you have, I don't care what it is useful and valuable to soul. There is nothing to be shunned or hated or avoided or looked at despicably. Everything is walking you home. Everything is answering your prayer for absolute freedom. And speaking about freedom, excuse me, one of the things I want to impress upon everyone is the fact that as long as you're happy here, you're having your needs met, you're living your dream life, you're achieving your goals and objectives, you're not going to want to leave here. You're going to want to perpetrate and maintain all of these things, but you won't have that desperate longing for liberation. And it's fine to have many, 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 many thousands and thousands of lifetimes enjoying the things of the psychic and material universes. It's fine. It's part of what soul does. So you fulfill these in life after life. But get a little perspective here. You've had thousands and thousands and thousands of mothers and fathers, millions of lovers and spouses and children and grandchildren and great-great-great-grandchildren. You've had numerous pets. You have been a pet. Because many basic cells evolve right from the animal kingdom into their first semblance of alliance with a human. And from thence, they eventually evolve into humans. So get a little perspective here. How many houses have you had? How many meals have you eaten? How many lands have you visited? How many colors of skin have you worn? How many planetary civilizations have you dwelt in, or perhaps created? Sometimes you're creator gods. Sometimes you're the one that created the civilization that is now visiting the planet Earth. It's said we're being visited now by, I forget the exact number, but thousands of different civilizations are coming to watch the shift of vibration and level that the Earth is undergoing now. So get a little perspective. You've been the kings and the queens. and the peons and the peasants and the criminals and the saints. Is one better than the other? You know, from the higher perspective, no. A life as a criminal is just as valuable as a life as a saint. A life as an ordinary peon is just as valuable as the life of a monarch. Get a little perspective here. It's all in the seeing. True seeing is revelatory. True seeing reveals the truth beyond the form, beyond the appearance, beyond the interactment. Above all else, I want to see. Another lesson in the Course in Miracles. Above all else, I want to see. Really see, capital S. And when you truly see, everything will seem perfect as it is, just as it is. You won't try to change anything because you realize the appropriateness of everything being exactly the way it is. Every soul knows what it has to do here. It's on a course and a curriculum that's best for it. We cannot determine what is good or bad from this level. As long as we're looking through the dualistic, ego-separative mind, we can't see anything truly as it is. And when you do see it truly, you'll leave it alone. You'll let it be. You won't judge it. You won't manipulate. You won't control. You won't coerce. You won't mess with that consciousness. Now, if you've had genuine spiritual experience, it is your dharma to share it. But that's all you do. You share it. It's like you present a meal and you put it out there, and if they come and eat it, fine. If they don't, fine. Your job was to prepare the meal and serve it. And whether people eat it or they don't eat it, that's their business, okay? But teach only from what you have directly experienced. Otherwise, you're a false teacher. You have to do the work. You have to ripen that consciousness and mature it. And I'll tell you, a good indicator of how you have matured, the level of your maturity, is how you handle problematic situations. The immature, the ego self, will always play the victim and will always project the blame on someone or something outside of themselves. Always. You can see that in the news today, on television. You can see how those who are operating from the ego are always blaming someone else. That's the old scapegoat approach. Now, the mature individual takes full responsibility for whatever shows up in their life. They take full responsibility for their life. They know they have created, allowed, promoted, requested, and postulated whatever their experience is. They want it there because they created it to be there so they could handle it and thereby perfect their own self-mastership, which is an ongoing process. We're constantly refining, tweaking, bringing it up to a more perfect representation of the divine being that we truly are. And when a person is going through something horrifically difficult, sometimes they have worked for lifetimes to get everything ripened and brought to a place where they can finally clear it once and for all. And sometimes that's the last incarnation. But if you rush in as a goody-goody, let me help you, let me do it for you, let me throw money at you, whatever, 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 you can completely rob them of perhaps a lifetime they have worked for many lifetimes to get to the point where they could finally clear that situation and step free. The last incarnation is often very difficult, because you have to have an intense desire to free yourself, to free yourself. You can't be lackadaisical about that. You've got to be really hungry for God before you're going to put everything else subservient to that. So bear in mind that nothing comes into our life, your life, our life, that can't ultimately be for our highest good and emancipation. Everything comes to serve in our freedom. And so, if you're having a really difficult incarnation, which many of us are, and this year has, last couple years have been really hard, it's because we're finishing it up. We're clearing it. That's what's happening on the planet. That's what's happening in America. That's what's happening in the nations of the world. That's what's happening everywhere. We're clearing it up. We've got to all walk each other home, arm in arm. So the only way to exit polarity is through transcending it to a higher perspective. And that's what we call soul transcendence. And living from the balcony of that higher awareness, you regard every experience as a lesson to be learned, and ultimately contributing something that is beneficial not only to ourself, but to all life. So I hope this has been instructive. Notice what you're noticing. Look beyond the obvious. Love it all. Forgive it all. Accept it all. Work with it all as something that is for your highest good. Whatever it is, in all things, give thanks and appreciation, because that will exit the negative realms faster than anything else. Appreciation, acceptance, gratitude are the very keys to higher consciousness. So, let's go out chanting three Anahi Hues. And remember, beyond your personal universe is the real world that you share eternally with God. And when you peck out of that eggshell of the ego, you will find that you have the strength to enter the God realms and the Godhood. That is your eternal reality. And your life will just begin for the first time. Everything else has been but a dream. So deep breath. Anahi Hues. blessings and grace to one and all. Namaste.